Welcome to Policy 360 Unplugged.
Today, I'm delighted to chat with Claire Hannah. Claire started her political journey as a councillor to her current role as a Member of Parliament for South Belfast. In this episode, Claire shares her strategies and insights on influencing policy at both a local and national level. Enjoy.
Claire, thank you so much for agreeing to take part in my podcast. I really appreciate it. And we know about your background and stuff in terms of entering politics. But for my listeners, could you sort of tell us a little bit about why you decided to enter politics, but specifically at Westminster?
Oh, yeah, sure. Well, I grew up in a household. My parents were active in the community in various ways and in the SCLP. So public service and getting involved in things and taking a big interest in the world around you locally and further afield was just a part of the ethos of the house I grew up in. But and I worked in the voluntary sector for probably until I was in the assembly in my early 30s. But and in large parts as a campaigner. So a lot of what you were doing was saying, you know, write to your MP on this or lobby your MLA on that. So I was aware of the power to do that a little bit. I was with Concern Worldwide for a large part of that. We did a lot of long-term development work, and seeing that up hand gives you quite a lot of perspective about delivering public services in acutely challenging places. So that was just a very good foundation. And the opportunity came up when I was about 30 to run for council. And then that's, you know, like a lot of sort of happenstance, was in the right place for an assembly seat in about 2015. And then along came Brexit and it sort of took over my life from about 2016 to 2019. And the election that really was on Brexit then, there was a vacancy, I suppose, for somebody to articulate the views of South Belfast on that. So that's how I ended up there.
Yeah, I mean, I've read about, you know, your household and stuff and your parents, which is amazing in terms of, you know, that was your route into politics. Can you tell me a little bit about what you're proud of in terms of what you have achieved? And I suppose, you know, you've achieved a lot in terms of council level, being at the Assembly and now being at Westminster.
Yeah, it's a hard because if you look at, I've been a councillor and I've been an MLA and I've been an MP. I haven't been, you know, a minister or, you know, somebody who's getting to allocate and say, you know, I'm the person who signed off this big policy. So there's, people are interested in getting involved. Public council is a very rewarding place to do that. I mean, you were actually able to, you know, get policies on the board. I made Belfast City Council in 2013, the first living wage council on the island of Ireland, and then the biggest living wage employer in Northern Ireland, was able to change our policy on zero hour contracts again around that time, changed our procurement policy on things like not doing business with tax avoiders and a few initiatives for the arts and stuff. So you can actually kind of go idea follow through in a way you probably can't to the same extent in the Assembly and at Westminster. But I suppose the things that, you know, the good job you want to do is about representation and the quality of your argument. And I suppose especially in this turbulent world that we're in, and sometimes politics does feel disconnected, when you can, you know, make a contribution that people feel says what they feel needed to be said and makes politics feel a little bit more relevant and connected to them, and that's an achievement. And then I suppose just the everyday stuff we do in terms of infrastructure for the local community, whether, you know, it's a pedestrian crossing here, or I remember somebody telling me that outside her front of her house there'd been a manhole cover loose, and for months every time, like the go quang quang about 20 times a night, and she wasn't sleeping and she hadn't been able to get it fixed, and we were able to get it supported the next day. And just those little things when people come in and they have hit some mad bureaucratic knot with, whether it's, you know, the housing executive or HMRC or something, and we can help them untangle something what has been stressing them out, and it's those achievements as well.
Yeah, I suppose also that, you know, because you represent people in the area, they do come to you with all kinds of problems. Totally. So you are actually there for them, whatever they need.
Absolutely. And that is absolutely right and proper. And I'm of this constituency and I live here. And people do. They would, you know, you bump into them on the road or the queue in the shop or whatever, and something that's bothering them. And they do bring it up, and we can you know, do our best to get it sorted. Obviously, a very large part of the time that I've been actively in politics, including from I was in the Assembly in 2015 to where we are now, what, in 2024, there's been about 2 years of sitting executive in that time. So you do hit a lot of brick walls in terms of changing policy, and that has made it difficult. Stuff like, I'm just looking out the window in my office here, and things like a residence parking scheme is something that loads of people in the inner South Belfast neighbourhoods want. But, you know, when there aren't ministers in place long enough to take through policies, you can't do all the things you would wish to do. But a lot you can do, but a lot more to do as well.
And I suppose that's the other thing, you know, you represent the people here, but they don't differentiate between council, assembly, or Westminster.
Yeah, absolutely. I wouldn't ask them to, but you're absolutely right. People don't navigate the differences. And as I say, whether it's a query with your Benny, thankfully we've got a good team of local councillors, and I've got an excellent assembly colleague as well. We sort of share out the workload, but certainly for my constituency team here, who are absolutely incredible, the problems I solve for people and the ingenuity and the respect and support they give people when they come through door. Because more often than not, when people come to us, they have tried everything else and they're at their wits' end. And as I say, we had a guy in, as one example, he had been getting parking notices for parking infringements in London, and he'd be getting a bridge, and he'd been taken to court, and he was saying, I don't live in London, I live in, and it turned out his number plate had been cloned, and somebody was, but he was being taken to court, he was running up a legal bill, he was at the end of his rope trying to get this sorted out. We were able to sort it out within a few days because I kind of knew a Labour councillor in the council that was responsible for it. But things like that just make a big, big difference. That people have been knocking their head off a big bureaucratic brick wall. We can help solve those problems. And it's very, very rewarding.
I suppose you're talking about in terms of connecting with other MPs in other parts of the UK. I suppose that's really important, yeah, and beneficial to being an MP then.
That's a big part of, you know, and I've just always believed in working cross-party and where you can. And I'm one MP of 650. So if somebody comes to me, say, for example, people be aware of the Horizon post office issue. You know, I had one sub-postmaster who had been affected as a constituent. I don't know how to solve that problem on my own, but I was able to join all party groups and things like that. So I work very closely with, for example, Green MP Caroline Lucas, who's a real leader on environmental issues and knows and has a good research team that can help us. But we could put an amendment on this bill that might achieve this, that, and the other. So working cross-party is very, very important. That's most coming from, again, council. That gets done a lot. It's not as whipped and steel as the assembly can be. You can work with a local councillor from another party and say, you know, I think this is something that would really help out this neighbourhood. Will you support me on it? And it's really good training for doing that across the water as well.
That is fabulous. It brings me on to asking you about, you know, what do you see as your main challenges, but also opportunities as an SDLP MP?
You're in terms of being a Westminster MP, you're a generalist for a start, which is, you know, it's not, you know, I'm going to throw myself into, you know, Select Committee on Health or whatever. My job is to speak up for South Belfast, but I think the region is all of Northern Ireland, and kind of in a lot of ways to interpret Northern Ireland for people, to give them an account of, and actually in the last few years to contradict some of the things that are said for us and about us. And again, I refer to the Brexit mess and some of the impressions people's had about what Northern Ireland wanted or needed, and being there to say, nope, this is not correct, and being there to push back hard on some of what Boris Johnson and Liz Truss were trying to do, and some of the catastrophic outcomes we could have had on Brexit that they would have got away with if there hadn't been myself and Colin and Stephen Barry there saying, this is not correct, because people, you know, believe what they're told a little bit. So, as I say, rebutting some of the bad stuff, interpreting, just explaining. I've had a big group of Labour MPs, for example, coming over in a couple of weeks, just on a bit of a fact finding, just to get their head around, just the way of the world in this part of the world, so that, you know, whenever they're in different departments as ministers, hopefully in a few months, they will understand the complexities and the opportunities, and they'll have an affection for this place. So that's a big part of it. And as I say, linking in, like, there's so much that happens in Westminster that affects our lives. Obviously, you know, pensions, welfare, not a top line health policy, but all sort of immigration, all sorts of issues like that. So it's about kind of putting a shoulder to efforts of their groups and MPs and making there too.
Can I ask you about how would people that work in the community and voluntary sector, especially the policy workers, how can they engage with you and how can they bring issues to you? Because one of the things that is a concern at the moment is the welfare system and how it's impacting on people. So how can they raise issues with you and help you do your job as well?
And that's I'm really lucky to have a great team, but a particularly incredible guy, Walter, talking for advice, and I before it knows the welfare system like the back of his hand, including the traps that people get caught in, and is very good at saying, look, we've had 7 people in the last month that have fallen prey to this particular loophole or not or whatever, and then we can put down, you know, parliamentary questions and stuff. But it's again seeing patterns in the work, the policy work that you're doing in your organization, seeing patterns in what this is a problem that needs to be addressed, and even better if you can identify the solution as well. A lot of elected reps are not necessarily specialist in your area, or don't have a specialist on their team, and B, are dealing with a bazillion other things as well, and don't get to go straight down into the weeds where the policy workers will go. So the best examples are when people come and say that, you know, you've mentioned that, noticed you talked about, you know, this issue. Say, for example, asylum is a big part of my workload. You will be aware that there's a cliff edge when people get their refugee status, that, you know, that there's somebody put out of their accommodation within 7 days, and we need to address that. People come and say, this is the problem. This is what we've identified as the solution. Can you, so sometimes if you can sort of, you know, lay it out for your elected representative, that will make it easier than them having to go, right, how do I go back? How do I address this? So to the extent you can, make the brief relevant to something that is in their constituency. Look for politicians who seem to be kindred to the, if you're an environmental, you know, say like you're campaigning on, you know, green spaces, you know, don't go to somebody who's never, you know, check and see if they've mentioned or they seem interested in those issues. But if you can make it relevant to the time, it helps. You know, in a busy week, if somebody says, I want to talk to you about radiator production, you know, and I'm like, we're too busy, you know, what's the relevance of this? But if they say, look, there's a bill coming through here now on, you know, household energy and insulation, and we believe we've got a way of dealing with that, or something like that, just try and make it timely in that regard.
That's excellent advice. And I suppose it means having a look at the Westminster website and finding out what's coming up and what has been discussed.
Yeah.
That is really, really helpful.
And I suppose, I mean, this, you know, it's like if you, get having a scan on the horizon and see what's going on. And I know there's different ways to do that. Get a sense as well. It helps when people who do a policy and campaign it are, you know, relatively political animals. That's not to say they have to be, you know, kind of a mad ideologue, but if they've got a sense of the way things work. So sometimes people, I probably on a weekly basis, somebody says, will you ask this question of PMQs for me? And, you know, you go, well, that, it doesn't unfortunately work that way. I get allocated a PMQ, you know, twice a year or whatever. I can just rock up and say, hey, so if people have a sense of what is and isn't possible, and, you know, people might say, they're like, and if you get this amendment on, I'm like, you can't, there needs to be a bill that you can amend. So don't get me wrong, the average person in the street can't be expected to know that. I didn't know it until I was an MP, but if you try and have a sense of basics of the procedure and the possibilities, and, and what people are able to achieve. It means that nobody wants to start the conversation by having to completely disappoint you. It means that people you can spend your time discussing the issue more constructively if the politician isn't having to say what is and isn't possible.
That is so helpful, and I suppose that idea of coming up with a solution as well, rather than just a whole manifesto.
Yeah, yes, totally. And don't get me wrong, I know that's. I you don't expect that if somebody comes to me about an issue they're expecting the constituency. But when you're a policy part, that's really good. And by the way, so many times in my particularly my business, the policy people, they know their way around that system a heck of a lot better than me. You know, it is, and it's people that are very, very expert and have been really useful. And basically, you know, they make the snowball and I throw it. It does make your life a lot easier when somebody says this is the problem and this is how you can help, rather than you kind of have the hook around yourself for the possible remedy.
Can you talk a little bit about the sort of the practicalities? So if someone has an issue, they have a solution, mm-hmm. how do they then connect with you or your office? Is it email? Is it meeting up? You know, should they consider the relationship building aspect of that as well?
I mean, I think people do that. And again, we try and, you know, people as far as possible, and I know everybody's pressed for time, try and tailor it a wee bit rather than if somebody says, dear local MP or dear MLA, and you go, this is a mail shop of 650 people. If they say something like, we are dealing, we are a charity that specializes in, I don't know, whatever, and in South Belfast, we know this is an issue for X number of people, to the extent you can, or something like, you have asked a question on the issue of, you know, whatever it is before, and so we know you're interested in this, because quite often, just when you're going through literally hundreds of emails a day, you know, trying to prioritize, and time is so tight, you'll say, look, send that to everybody. It's not something I've got to, you know, I'm going to be able to fix on my own. And again, I suppose if they say we want to come and brief you on diabetes and something really, really broad, if it says we want to come and brief you on a new development for treatment that we want to be available to you, or something like that, try and because if I go, gosh, well, you know, I don't know if I can fit an hour in to, you know, basically become expert in this. So try and tailor it to things that you know either that the politician is interested in or make it. I mean, if it's something that is affecting X number of people, that makes me interested in it, you know. So that's an important way to do it. Most people email and offer me quite often, and then I love to meet people. I'm thirsty for knowledge, and I really enjoy talking to people who are knowledgeable about their area and getting the opportunity to kind of benefit from all the research they've done and just try and pick their brains on it. And I try and do that as much as possible. But yeah, if you try and make it real, more often than not, we will say to people, you know, what specifically do you want to talk about? Like, what would the agenda be? So that it isn't just, you know, coming in and trying to talk about life, universe, and everything in a short period of time. Again, for campaigning groups, say for example, it's the issue of end of life care and potential if you're a campaigning group, if you can get somebody to come say, I want to come talk to you about the experience that I have had or I am having, get a constituent who is experiencing the issue to come. I mean, in a lot of particularly health conditions, that's the most powerful advocate, is somebody who is living the situation, as you know, things I've talked to you about before, and getting an MP or an MLA to say, look, this is somebody who you represent who wants to come talk to you about your experience is powerful.
Absolutely. I think that lived experience voice so powerful. I wanted to ask you, obviously you've done a lot of work across the island. Should charities that are specifically within Northern Ireland, should they consider expanding on an all-island basis in terms of influencing policy? And I suppose what I'm asking is, because of Europe and the influence of policy in Europe, should we consider broadening our scope?
Yeah, well, so if you look at the kind of European debate, one of the principles of the European Union that I've been to is subsidiarity, making a decision at the most relevant level, essentially. And if there's stuff that has a cross-border dimension or, you know, elsewhere, you know, across these islands, absolutely use it. You'll find a lot of times a bit of a shortcut is the Delbinus in Scotland, for example. What was that? I did a private member's bill in 2017 and I was like, well, oh, I know where I'll start. A comparable piece of legislation, you know, passed 3 or 4 years ago in a parliament with similar powers. So if there's policy sharing experience or you can learn from the way people have done, absolutely do that. I mean, people don't do it just for the sake of it, but there's obviously loads of issues that have an acute north-south dimension and loads of issues that simply don't stop at the border. And you should again see how others have solved this problem. You say, look, you're trying to tackle childcare. We've noticed that this has been done really, really well in this region or another, this initiative thing is happening. So people like, it's, you know, it's good to have an example of how a problem is solved. It makes you go, okay, right, that's a really good try as well. So definitely work.
Yeah, that's brilliant.
So just kind of when reinvent the wheel. If there's a campaign group or a, you know, an organization who's Dublin is in Dublin, then copy them, frankly. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's so important to look at other jurisdictions, definitely in terms of what you're asking. And I suppose you could even come up with solutions as well based on that.
And there's just data sets. You might say, well, look, you know, they've done, you know, research and, you know, 45% of people in the South think in this, just because you think this or 15% are into this issue, and we know that we have, you know, extremely comparable societal views. So it's useful if you can't afford to do that sort of research. You know, you can say, well, look, this is what we think in Wales or in Galway, then just use what's out there in a way that's unfair. Well, obviously if you've got, and also just one other thing in terms of the say it and expect people to know that, you know, like what Westminster deals with and what the Assembly deals with, the policy people should, you know, if it is something about, I mean, don't get me wrong, I like to be informed and know those things, but if it is a nitty gritty policy change that needs to be done in the Assembly, that's probably better to see an MLA about it. Albeit quite often you come to me, there's stuff I can do to raise awareness of it and, you know, collaborate with Matthew and others, but if you kind of know where something's supposed to be fixed is a good start.
That is very good advice. Thank you. What would you say is your future aspirations as an MP, but also for the SDLP?
Well, look, one thing I'm genuinely excited about, and one, I'm just delighted that the Assembly is back. I am a sucker for stability and positivity, and it's really welcome because there's just so many things the Assembly can't do. But I'm really excited about the SDLP's role in opposition. I think it is a really positive evolution of the Assembly, and I think in the first early few weeks, our team up there have been very clear, you know, that they're not there just to kind of throw things and heard from the ditch. They are trying to just achieve transparency and accountability, and they're given breathing space to get the policies through. Although the executive partners haven't meeting for about 18 months, you know, in anticipation of the executive coming back, and we should start seeing that working through soon. So I'm really excited about that. For me, as I say, nothing in politics is certain, but I think a Labour government is likely. I really hope to, and there's always a fight in your hands, and properly, I don't believe in, it shouldn't be safe, it needs to be complacent, but if I'm lucky enough to be returned next year or this year, I'll want to work with them, and hopefully it'll be a different dynamic, and you're not kind of pushing back against terrible things that are being done, you're kind of shaping and encouraging better things that can be done by the government. But again, it's just trying to promote my ethos of things that are important to me, which is, you know, anti-sectarianism, centre-left, socially just policies at the various levels.
And on that, thank you so much for your time, Claire. Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to Policy 360 Unplugged. I hope this episode provided you with valuable insights and a deeper understanding of how you can influence policy. Don't forget to subscribe and share this podcast. Your support is much appreciated. Until next time.